Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are doing well. As per usual, our wonderful patrons, thank you so much for your support. If you would like to join, get early access to episodes, get a couple extras as well. Some updates before we publish them on the website. You can go to patreon.com/RomaPress. And again, we greatly appreciate all of our wonderful patrons who are making the group chat fire right now, Andy, between the Euro and the onslaught of transfer markets. It is never a dull moment. So if you enjoy torturing yourself, even when Roma are not in season, feel free to go to patreon.com/RomaPress. And then at IS Roma Press on YouTube for the video version of the podcast, and at IS Roma Press for all of the social media stuff, like, subscribe, you know the drill at this point. Again, all of your support, it is immense. It is greatly appreciated. We can't thank you all enough. And it helps us, Andy, come on here. All of the support we've got, where when we say things that, hey, it might not get millions of views. Like, I don't know, I look at some of the absurdity on YouTube at what does get a million views. And clearly, I know nothing, because probably 40% of it is nonsensical to me. But we will save that for another time. But we can come on here and talk about a variety of transfer markets related stuff. We will get into that momentarily. But the first thing I think we should get into is Dan Friedkin. 2 years, or actually the official owner of Roma as of August 2020. Since that time, he has snapped up a smaller French club, and now he's about to snap up, am I allowed to say, I doubt there are many Liverpool supporters, Roma adjacent, like Liverpool supporters, or located in that area. Am I allowed to say a smaller English side? I don't even know how to give stick to them, because I know nothing of Everton. I know quite literally some zero about the club. All I know is that they're rivals in the same geographical location as Liverpool, which, again, if you're a Roma supporter, odds are you probably have a very strong disliking for that club. So there's not really much I have in terms of personal opinion. Have you been, what is their nickname? The Blues and the Toffees?
The Toffees, yes.
Have you been secretly indulging in your love of Toffees, football?
Only when I was a kid. That was, my grandpa, who was a hunter, used to give me Toffees, yes.
Every grandfather gives Toffees.
It was the best. It was the best. And it was actually when he would take me on hunting trips, he would give me Toffees to shut me up, so that I wouldn't scare the animals away. Yes, that was Andy at the age of 7 or 8 eating Toffees in some godforsaken forest. And so that's, yeah. What? But listen, smaller English side, Dan Friedkin knows what he's doing, man. Everton are about to get a new stadium. It's going to be, they're going to play the Euros there, the next Euros there. Again, we have to remember what we're, yesterday I was appearing at this Everton dedicated podcast. I found myself fumbling for words when I was trying to draw a comparison between Italy and Serie A and England and the Premier League when it comes to football, when it comes to infrastructure, when it comes to like, what a potential owner or a potential buyer rather looks into, because when you say, oh, you're acquiring Roma, well, you're acquiring one big headache. With Everton, who are also in a lot of debt, just like Roma were when Friedkin approached them first. Still, Everton are in debt, but as always with everything in the Premier League, there is a huge potential behind all the negative stuff. And you're looking at modern league, modern infrastructure, a country that values football, that knows what football means, And so from a business standpoint, I said yesterday on the podcast, it's challenging because, you know, Friedkin, when he came into Roma, he didn't know one thing about football. 4 years later, here he is, and he's splashing over €1 billion because that's reportedly what he paid in order also to cover €400 million in debt. And here he is embracing just another complicated context like Roma's. Everton, whose best result in recent years was 10th place with Carlo Ancelotti, and the man was sacked. they've been under heavy financial fair play constraints. They're selling their best players to the likes of Arsenal and Tottenham and whatnot. So talk about a Roma lookalike in the Premier League. That's exactly what Dan Friedkin went after for some reason.
Well, what's most interesting, and I was speaking to a gentleman at the Liverpool Echo over the previous 48 hours, just going back and forth with him. I don't think he published anything I said to him, or at least I hope he didn't. I haven't verified that. But just to give background on this, because, man, you want to talk about getting the band back together. I felt like it was back 5 years ago when me and Filippo Bianfora were speaking at some of the most ungodly hours, when I thought for sure if there was ever a point where I was where my wife would leave me, it was at this point during the the absolute hectic, chaotic, ridiculously extended negotiation period between the Friedkin group and James Palotta at the time. Just to give some brief background, I mean, Friedkin, before acquiring Roma, I mean, the Premier League was his preference. He wanted to buy a Premier League team. And I always thought, even after officially acquiring Roma, and then what division is Khan in now?
I think it's fourth. It's still fourth, I think.
They did not achieve promotion. They were in the fourth, if I am not mistaken.
Well, I doubt Ryan Friedkin had that much of an impact on a team that I think is purely existent in the minds of people who love the Cannes Film Festival, which lasts about 2 weeks, once a year in April/May. So I'm not exactly sure that that city holds any footballing potential, but whatever. That's another weird little side project for the Friedkins.
So side project is the perfect way to describe it.
Yeah. I mean, Roma is the main challenge. Cannes is the little side project for Ryan Friedkin to play around with. And now, fans, I think that's what the Everton media want to know, is how Roma fans are reacting to the news. How does a Roma fan feel when he hears that the owner of his club, an American, and already, you know, in Italy, after James Palotta, the idea of an American owner, oh my God, you know,
yeah, right,
an American is willingly shifting the focus and acquiring a Premier League club. And that's another big scare for Roma fans, is how can we compete with the appeal, with the spotlight that the Premier League brings with itself. So how do we react to that? As you mentioned, you know, Friedkin went through such a long process to acquire Roma. Meanwhile, here, Everton, I don't know if it's something related to the owner, to the situation they're in, or just like English bureaucracy. But man, did this agreement come in fast. You know, if it's gonna be announced within the next days, I mean, this thing seems like it took just a couple of weeks or something, whereas with Roma, I remember you were up at like 3 a.m. talking to some guy working the night shift at an airport in Dallas who may have interacted with Dan Friedkin once when he was boarding a plane in 1997. You know, this with Everton, BBC reports that they're nearing an agreement, and there it is, you know. So I don't know what it is. I'm fascinated by the fact that the Friedkins, after not qualifying for Champions League football, after winning a Conference League trophy with Roma, after continuing to struggle to inject capital to get Roma out of its debt, to battle financial fair play, they go in a different direction and they focus on a club that is, I mean, it's, I wouldn't say a copy, but it's very, it has some glaring similarities to Roma. It's fascinating because you could have picked any other club and faced a completely different context. Whereas here, Everton, they're struggling just as Roma were in 2020.
Well, absolutely. Listen, when something like this happens, I can understand the trepidation. My initial thoughts on this were one, this is going to probably shock Dan Friedkin. Like I can just picture it now, you know, Dan Friedkin when they set this big prospectus, that, because this is what happens when a club is up for sale. They hire a JP Morgan, one, you know, the banks, you know, synonymous. We all know the names. And they go out and they contact prospective parties, and they hand out this prospectus, you know, hundreds of pages thick, filled with just nonsense, gibberish, but obviously important financial aspects as well. I can just see, once this deal goes through, because it is going to go through, and by the way, the fact that, because literally for 72 hours ago, Dan Friedkin wasn't even being discussed as the one, the two, or even top three. Not even in the top three to potentially take over Everton. So for him to emerge like this, again, it says to me a couple of things. One, I can just picture it now when after like one quarter, and he sees money from. Can you imagine the look on his face? I can just see the tear running down his cheek, just the tears of joy, like happiness, yeah? When he sees the figures of like the television rights deals, and he looks at the figure and he says to, you know, like the senior accountant who handed him the sheet, he said, "No, this is it. It's this much. This isn't the misprint." And then he out of his takes his work bag, and he just so happens to have the numbers of Roma there alongside him, and he compares the two of like the television rights, and he looks back and forth, and the tear just wells up into dozens more.
Absolutely,
because he realized, oh my, I can make money over here. Fuck, oh yeah. My gosh,
yeah.
I can make money.
Yeah,
I can actually earn something.
Yeah.
I listen, clearly the other thing this says to me, and this is going to be obvious for everybody, you don't have to be an accountant good with numbers or even be in the media to understand this. Dan Friedkin has cash. I can't even say it the way I'm trying to say it, like the Sopranos do, like that weird, like Paulie Walnuts. Cash. They've got cash. I mean, a drop in the bucket. A drop in the bucket. The one journalist I was speaking to at the Liverpool Echo, I sent him the article that I put out, I think it was 2022, where we were sort of tracking when Roma were still trading on the Borsa.
Yeah.
I would write articles about what... Yes, I would write about what, essentially, because these balance sheets, it's, again, gibberish, but just breaking it down in simplistic terms. So after 18 months, okay, Friedkin, and this is the total cash investment that he had put into Roma. This is, by the way, excluding what he paid for the club. So this is, he pays for Roma, and then this is cash he is putting in on top of that. Well, as of April 2022, it was 359 million euros. So we can say very easily that is up to well over half a billion at this point. So the guy is not hurting in any way, shape, or form. I actually think, though, Andy, this will be beneficial for both, because, again, you have a Friedkin group who are just swimming. Man, you think of these numbers, and maybe it's just having done this for so long. it's kind of easy to get wrapped up in 359, half a billion, just these nonsensical figures that are, it's almost like fake maths. It's almost as if this money is just doesn't exist. We say it's alongside unicorns or something like that. But when you just think about the amount of cash, the guy just, yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. Here. Okay. There we go. Sure. This is clearly going to be an opportunity for him to, yes, invest a very large sum of money. But I can't help but my first thought was, okay, well, Roma are definitely going to benefit from this. This is their indirect way, so to speak, of being able to kind of reach their hand into the coffers of the Premier League. Now, obviously, UEFA has this stupid thing with the multi-club ownership and all of this other crap. Listen,
I was asked if that was going to be a problem if Everton compete in the same competition, in the same tournament, say the Europa League or, you know, whatever. So far, they haven't managed to achieve European football. But what happens then? I think it's going to become more of a norm as time goes on. You already have Girona, who are owned by the same group as Manchester City. They're going to be competing in Europe. You know, this is going to become the norm.
You have countries owning clubs. Until the PSG thing gets addressed, I don't want to hear anything.
It will become the norm for Friedkin. Again, this is the step up that they were looking for. I never had the feeling that a group that is completely unfamiliar with football, the first thing they do is they splash a whole lot of money on Roma and that's it. I never thought that this was going to be their only project. It's impossible. It's not going to happen. These people have so much money. They have to do something with it. Owning a club in the Premier League, what better way to make money, you know? And to have a brand, to build a brand in Italy, in England, then possibly in France. Because, listen, I think if Cannes is just the first door opening to potentially owning another club in Ligue 1. So whatever happens, this is definitely for the Friedkins, it's building a brand. A man who is known for personally flying Tom Hardy's airplane in Dunkirk is not going to shy away from owning multiple clubs and wanting visibility, brand, image, prestige.
Yeah, well, here is the other thing, too. I think each of these clubs, you have Roma, you have Cannes, I think those two are in a different category than that of Everton, simply from the standpoint of, listen, this is the Premier League. There are financial opportunities just by being there. It doesn't matter if Everton are a mid-table side. Just being there, there are financial opportunities that are just not even... forget the realm of possibility, or even in this lifetime that we will see happen in Serie A, no matter how much I want to complain about the country or just how backwards they are with many things, they are never going to reach some of the heights that the Premier League has achieved in terms of just their global reach, global brand. With Roma, if you talk to some of the people within the Friedkin group, they view this as a sporting opportunity, but also, I mean, we know how deep their pockets are when it comes to tourism. Yeah, they have the hotels, they have all of these locations throughout, located throughout the world,
they produce movies, multiple movies every year. So
yeah, this is when it comes to Roma, when it comes to Khan, this is a multi-arm sort of approach where, yes, it's going to be sport, but there's also the tourism. There's other opportunities, the cinema. There's other opportunities for us to monetize off the back of Roma. Whereas I think for Everton, I have been to Liverpool. I think you have too. No, I don't think they'll have to worry too much about...
Take it easy, man. That's the Beatles sound. That's the Beatles sound. Take it easy. Take it easy. You're from Vicenza. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, my friend. Okay, so let's take it easy.
Those are, in fairness, though, those are like equivalents in terms of play. So I don't know
in the UK what that is.
I'm not going to do the tourism thing in the UK. I haven't been to enough places. But I just think when it comes to Everton, you know, the Friedkin Group, just being in the Premier League, having a club in the Premier League, you are going to make money. You're going to make money. Now, is there a reason to worry if you're a Roma supporter? In my opinion, no. But I do find it interesting because I did an interview about this, I think a week or two ago, when Friedkin was initially initially stated as an interested party. When I was also asked about the multi-club ownership thing, and I mentioned, and I didn't really mean to make a comparison by any way, but 7/7 Partners, who own Genoa, they also own Standard in Belgium. Who else? They have another Brazilian club that they just acquired, I think, last year. They were actually in talks to acquire Everton, but then the Premier League did not give to them the sign-off to acquire the club. And there's also been some interesting dealings with them. And I've interviewed two of the guys there. It just the fact it's based in Miami on top of it gets me a little...
Shady. Uncomfortable.
Yeah, you know, it's like, where's Hyman Roth? Where, you know, where is he at?
Like somebody's going to take you into a helicopter and have you dangle over the Pacific.
Yeah, it's some of the way they get their money. It's a little interesting, particularly if you look into their thing with Sevilla at the moment. But anyway, I wasn't making a comparison to that, but just by nature of having a multi-club, you know, having the Friedkin Group being an entity that owns multiple clubs, that just in and of itself is not that doesn't bring any certain advantage or positive aspect to it. But I think these guys are very different from the standpoint of, well, A, those 7/7 Partner guys, I think I've interviewed them twice. They probably don't know who the hell I even was prior to asking to them. Dan Friedkin, I've the lengths I've had to go to even to get to somebody even remotely connected to the Friedkin Group. They know the lengths I have gone. Forget the interview. How about a message on WhatsApp or something? I think that in and of itself, I mean, for me, to the fact they say nothing. And this is what I told the guy of the Liverpool Echo. He said, well, what is your perception of the Friedkin Group? And I responded exactly, well, 5 years. I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't tell you anything. You couldn't tell him anything. Nobody can. Nobody can. I mean, throughout the entire negotiation between the Friedkin Group to get Roma, I spoke to a legal counsel of the Friedkin Group. I don't think I'm outing anybody because it doesn't work there anymore. It was almost impossible to get anybody to speak on or off the record. Wasn't happening. Man, they have this culture of silence. it's pretty stunning. And by the way, because do you remember, Andy, when after he initially came, there were those articles about, well, Friedkin has to be more vocal. He has to be more.
Because
they couldn't, because we all know what happened with the Pelota thing. Yeah. It was he talks too much. He talks too much, but he has to be more present.
Yes.
So now you get the opposite with the Friedkin Group where they live there now. They move their entire lives from Houston.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry. Is it Houston or Dallas?
They do back and forth. They're always there. Ryan is always at the training. Dan flies
always.
In occasionally.
Yeah. Always. So now it's, it's great that they're here, okay? It's great that they're here. We need them to talk more, though. So you just have to laugh and shake that off.
Yes, but you know which league values the culture of silence among owners? It's the Premier League, because that's where actions matter more than words. And that's why the Premier League is appealing, is because you have the spotlight on, you can meet the moment, but you do so not with words, but with actions. The Friedkins have done just that. If there is one promise they kept when they signed on to this thing with Roma, is they said, you will not hear from us.
Right.
We will make sure to let you know when we think it's important for you to know something. And that's what they did. What did they do with De Rossi? They confirmed him before any to shut down all the speculations. They released a statement personally signed by Dan and Ryan Friedkin. They responded to the media. They responded to the media when there was talk of that clown purchasing the club and said, remember that. I'm not even going to mention his name. I don't even remember the guy who's been to jail and stuff. And he was rumored as potentially the new owner. Yeah. What did they do? Yes. Immediately, they shut it down. So when it matters, they're there. That's what I said to this podcast, to the Everton, is that, you know, they for them, you know, these are billionaires. It's fun. You know, this is money. But at the same time, I think they handle it pretty well. These guys have been heavily invested in everything that's going. They still are heavily invested. I mean, Dan meets with Daniele De Rossi to talk about next season. You know, a guy who up until a few years ago was just flying planes and riding horses. And now he's talking about, you know, signing 23-year-olds from Spain in the next summer window. So that's what we're looking at. I don't think people need to be scared. It's normal.
No.
It's going to be the new normal of having these groups owning more than just one club. But if it's done well, you can rest assured it can be done well so that the fans do not feel like they're being ignored or mistreated.
Yeah, listen, there are so many things when it comes to this sort of stuff that UEFA, we have already passed the Rubicon. You can't go back in time now, because I'm sure if they could, they would put some limitations on what can or what can't be done. But you as UEFA, you are now in a position where you're going to have to allow this, because all of these club presidents, owners, the clubs themselves. And by the way, I just want to reiterate, I don't think it will be an issue, because Dan Friedkin, he is on the board of the ECA, along with, I think the board president of that is the president of PSG. So I'm not very concerned. But UEFA, once you open this bottle, you can't put the cork back in. You have very awkward financial dealings with who owns clubs, with the multi-club ownership stuff. But you're going to have to allow it, because very simply, these clubs, they have UEFA by the balls with this Super League thing. And UEFA knows they're going to just have to appease, and they are in no position, none whatsoever. They have no leverage, none. They are in no position to be too stringent, which you may view as a good or a bad thing. For me, I think it's going to get to a point where seeing the same five clubs win the Champions League every year is going to get a bit tiresome. But this, you know, this is what you get. We can go on for hours and hours as to how we got here. But since we're already, again, past the Rubicon, can't go back. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think Roma can and will only benefit from this, so I wouldn't be worried, which is a good transition to the transfer market. The transfer market, it is going on. It's raging. We are seeing the full brunt of rumors. Can we bring this guy back, that guy back? It's always fun to see the immediate reactions, particularly in the patron group chat, because there's always such a strong opinion, quite especially if it is somebody not well-known or somebody that is not an immediate like-for-like in terms of quality replacement. I do enjoy it, because if you are willing to get yourself worked up during the summer, you will be institutionalized prior to the age of 50, because if you can't handle it during the summer, you're absolutely not going to be able, once the season begins, to handle that stress as well. So let's take a deep breath. As far as the latest rumors go, or some of the things that are concrete, I have one thing on Rick Karsdorp. I keep forgetting this. Not out on the website yet, haven't published it yet. His agent hasn't met yet with Gisolfi. That will be happening, not this upcoming week, but I think the next week. He has 1 year left on his contract. He is going to leave. It's nearly a certainty. I am curious to see what Roma think realistically they will get for him. It is interesting, the situation at fullback. Spinazzola, let me just put it up there now. Let me put on the graphic of the costliest, or I should say the most expensive players of Roma, Andy, because I think that at least adds some context to what you're reasonably able to expect Roma to do this summer. Because once we put up, once people take a look at this thing, it's going to be very obvious as to what situation we're looking at. So we have up there what the six or seven most costliest players of Roma. I have been saying the exact same thing over and over for years. This will be one of those sayings where if you've been listening to the podcast, you have heard it in prior seasons. But in my opinion, and I would say most reasonable people, when you look, Andy, at the wage bill and just the overall cost of players, because annual cost, it includes the amortization of the transfer fee, amortization being the life of the contract. To make the maths easy, Roma pay 5 million euros for somebody, sign him to a 5 years contract. That means he amortizes 1 million euros per season. And then on top of that, the gross wage, and that is the annual cost of a player. The gross wage and then the amortization. If we look at Roma, if you weren't depressed before, you certainly will be now when it comes to what you can expect for Roma this summer. Roma's most expensive players. Okay, at the top we have Tammy Abraham. Oof. Okay, well, okay. Below him, who do we have? We have Marash Kumbula. Oof. Okay, well, who else is in the list of the top 6 to 7? I also have Shomuradov. Oof. Okay, so listen. The most expensive players on your team should reflect the quality out on the pitch. Your most expensive players should be your most most quality and players who contribute the most.
Paulo Dybala, Lorenzo Pellegrini, the likes. Yeah.
Yes. Now, if we were to take this list, does not include the previous season. So the guys who left, Spinazzola was among the most expensive. Romelu Lukaku, he was roughly 9 to 10 million yes. euros.
Renato Sanchez.
Yes. So there are, this is as current. This is not including the guys who are no longer at the club, technically.
Or free agents, or who left in 2 weeks.
Yes. Rui Patricio, I believe he would be ahead of Shomuradov in terms of annual cost. This is very easy. Your annual cost, the list of your most expensive players should reflect on the pitch who is the best, who contributes the most. And then at the bottom, the most shit who does nothing. That's how it should look. That is normal. Andy, I can't tell you for how many seasons now, Roma, it is. I'm truly beginning to think in my lifetime if it has ever looked like that. The last time Roma's costs of the squad, the most time it was in line with what it says on the pitch, probably was the Scudetto season. And I do not think I am exaggerating in any way, shape, or form. Because of the last 10 to 15 years, it has never happened. And currently, it is not happening as well. So, listen, when it comes to Roma this summer, you have to keep this in mind. You have to keep in mind the wage a guy makes. You have to also keep in mind what the transfer fee costs that they still weigh in terms of the amortization, how much of their transfer fee still weighs on the books of Roma. So given everything, given all of this, I have said, and you have reiterated, I don't expect big splashy. I don't expect a Romelu Lukaku kind of signing this summer. I think we are looking for, or not looking for, I think we are going to get very economically astute in terms of, okay, maybe we see a guy with 1 year remaining in a club needs to sell before they lose to him for free. Those kinds of things. Somebody very young that we see a lot of potential in, we can get it now before he jumps to a premium. As much as I know, people probably hate to hear that, and it kills them to have to know that they're going to get some, I won't say a known name, but somebody that has nowhere near the level of name recognition as a Romelu Lukaku. It sucks. I mean, this is the bed you made when you don't qualify for Champions League. This is the kind of crap you have to deal with. So, listen, where do we want to start? Mats Hummels on a free? How old is he? 44 now? I mean, this is the kind of stuff you're 35. Going to have to live with.
35.
Well,
35, I mean, but it's coming off a season where he's basically played like 90% of minutes, yes, for Borussia Dortmund. So we're talking about a guy who will be pursued by a lot of clubs this summer. The question, as you say, you know, is what do Roma want to do now? Because I think with the arrival of Ghisolfi and with Daniele De Rossi, the program was to eradicate basically the entire previous modus operandi of exactly signing players on very high contracts with large commissions, long-term contracts for aging players, you know, where then you end up with someone like Chris Smalling, whom you renewed two extra years. So he still has 1 year left on his contract, earns quite a bit. What do you do then? You know, is Roma will have to weigh this situation with Hummels, for example, because this is a guy who instantly makes your defense better, a guy who brings so much to the table, and yet at the same time, is he a good fit? Are these the things that you want in a player right now as you approach this new season and this transfer window, where you will have to address a lot of things, because Roma's number one priority is to alleviate the wage bill. The wage bill, the third highest wage bill in the country, which this past season totaled, I believe, like 104 million euros. Yes. So that's correct. A lot of money for a team that largely underperformed. So what do you want to do then? Because if the mission is to slash the wage bill by 10, 15% even, signing someone like Hummels is not the way, because this is going to be a guy who will bring a lot to the table, but whose demands will be quite high. Same thing for someone like Alvaro Morata. What happens then? You know, you have to weigh the pros and cons. These are players that can also up your game, that can solve your problems, sure. But what are the long-term detriments of these deals? You know, how does that work into what the Friedkins want to do with Daniele De Rossi this upcoming season? As always, and plus, remember, no growth decree. This is going to be
that's
a new
the
reality.
Other thing,
this is going to be a new reality, point. Not only for Roma, but for every other club. So, and it's a big problem. It's a big issue. It's something that clubs will have to live with. They're not going to have this. They're not going to have their lives easier this summer. It's not going to happen. Whether you're Roma or Inter and you just won the Scudetto, it's going to be a difficult summer of making these considerations, because Hummels was offered to Milan as well. Milan are not interested. They don't want to go there. They don't want to spend that kind of money. Milan have been in talks for weeks for Xerxes, but the guy's agent is asking for 15 million in commissions. And a club like Milan, despite being in the Champions League, despite having a healthier balance sheet than Roma, they can't handle it. This is the reality that we live with, and it's going to be interesting how Roma react to these offerings made, because as always in every transfer window there is big time free agents who get shopped around Europe all the time. So you're bound to end up having someone like Hummels linked to you. What do you do then? Because the appeal, the stardom that comes from such a name, a guy who's won everything there was to win, both with Bayern Munich and the national team, and yet, does that fit into your plans? You don't want to have a Chris Smalling 2-0, you know? So that's what I'm just saying.
Well, you absolutely don't want that. The growth decree just to give some context, Andy, it applies to those who are foreigners who come to work within the country. 50% of a tax break, 50%. So those figures I put on the screen earlier, those did not, that did not account for the growth decree being eliminated. Great. Yeah. Great shot on that one. I completely forgot to mention that. I mean, that is, by the way, Romelu Lukaku does not come to Roma this past season.
No, of course not. There's Romelu Lukaku decree. Who makes over 10 million euros.
Right.
It's not happening.
Correct.
Jose Mourinho, same thing. You know, we're talking about a completely different landscape. People, this thing has gone under the radar in English media, but for Italy, this Italian football will witness a complete turnaround in how they have to do business. I mean, a club like Inter, who are known for exactly picking these veterans who can bring something to the table, but they're making a lot of money. I mean, growth decree was the reason why Inter were able to build the squad they were building. Think about Eriksen. Think about Roma and Mkhitaryan when he first joined. You know, these are the things that were helping these clubs attract the players that normally they would not be able to attract. Now, this is going to become the case.
Yes, I mean, it's a huge, huge blow. Again, this is something we could go into for hours. You can only count on this country to actually find a beneficial law that can help aid and attract those to Italian football, only to completely dump on it not long after, because I believe it went, it was signed and put into law the April 2019. So it only took them a few years to screw this up. So you know, applause to them. Well, given that, let's just touch briefly then on the Euro. As you and I record this, I am coming off having watched the Dutch win in the late stages, and also having watched. I don't know if I was more surprised by Weghorst scoring late or Zalewski, who had.
Yeah, Zalewski, another wonderful performance of a player who's mentally clearly lighter. You know, just an incredible weight is off his shoulders when he plays for Poland. Even in the attitude, I mean, he was on tired legs playing against Frimpong, the same Frimpong who completely and utterly humiliated him in the match in the Europa League semifinal. So we're talking about the same player against the same opponent, more or less in the same position, and what the hell, you know, what in the world? So to me, that's just another confirmation. During these Euros, we will see this happening. We will see this happening with Zalewski. Sometimes context matters. It really matters.
Yes. And I
want to touch upon this as well, because with the Euros comes a lot of attention, as with every competition. Calafiori now will be linked with a myriad of English sides, okay? Because, you know, the aura, this whole image thing of him with the long hair resembling Nesta and the like. And he had quite an impressive performance against Albania, although he made mistakes. But Calafiori is a player whose rise is determined by the context. This Calafiori.
His ascent only happens because he leaves Roma. I need people to understand that.
This Calafiori would never have emerged at Roma, because you would never have seen him shift to the center back position. That's something that happens with trial and error, with going out on loan, or in his case, playing in a smaller league in Switzerland, getting to know, you know, what it feels like to be a starter, because that's what he was in Basel, unlike at Roma, and then slowly but surely meet the right manager in the right team, in the right context, less pressure, less everything, and that's
no injuries. Do we want to forget his knees?
That was inevitable. That's how it becomes. It's all part of it. It's part of the growth process of a footballer. In my opinion, that's exactly what Zaleski also needs to do, is change context, because it's clear as day that it's the context that puts pressure on Zaleski. Zaleski today was sharp even at the 90th minute, having run all up and down minutes, the pitch. Whereas with Roma, he looks like a headless chicken after like 9 minutes of playing time. So, and makes crucial mistakes, glaring misses, forgets to mark his man. Today, it was the opposite. You had a player who was sharp, focused, fast, precise, dominant. So all these things you're not getting from him at Roma. It's time for Zaleski to go. It's time to make considerations exactly for someone like Calafiori, a player whom, yes, you let go of, but he's the player that he is because he's not at Roma. Fratesi, same thing. Scamacca, same thing. This revisionism.
I can't do that, man.
It's a shame because it happens. Okay, it's a shame because sometimes you're called. I mean, let's remember Calafiori leaves because he cannot find a place in the team, and when he does, he underwhelms. He's part of the team that loses to Bodo. He's part of a number of teams that just fail to impress with him in the squad, and so natural consequence of it is let's go get him some playing time. He finds himself a home in Switzerland. Now, the fact that Roma did not foresee him becoming a star as a center back, that's a matter of finding the coach, the right coach in the right moment, having all the circumstances, all the stars align. Because listen, Calafiori, before joining Bologna, he was in talks with Milan. He was in talks with Milan before joining Bologna. He joins Milan, he's not playing the way he's playing now. With Stefano Pioli, he's still playing as a fullback. He's probably disappointing, and he's going back on back to Basel at the end of the season. At Bologna, he was allowed to breathe. He was allowed to be himself. He was allowed to experiment, to make mistakes. And it was only right because the context wasn't the context of a team that was aiming for Champions League football. It was the context of a team that was aiming.
Well, it's the same thing with Fratesi too, man. He said no. Hey, he could have came back. Roma couldn't close the deal. Sassuolo, they would not sell. And then the summer comes back around. And you know what? He says no. Once Inter comes in for him, he says, no, Roma, I go there. Okay. And then, man, and hearing all of these things too, even like Scamacca.
Turned his back, got pissed off, went to PSV. You know, he went to the Netherlands. Yeah. He went to the Netherlands.
His father comes to Trigoria. He comes with a bat and he tears apart the cars of like half of the staff.
Destroys the bonsai tree.
Destroys the bonsai tree. But that's the thing that is frustrating to me, because listen, it is a very easy talking point, because I saw it on the Zone. I don't know why I torture myself, but Roma must feel so torturous. Look at the starting 11 out there. It is three guys they gave away. And I'm thinking to myself, it's an easy thing to say now. Sit here, say it with all this division.
Just if you were here in 2019, 2020, when Calafiori was running up the pitch for Paulo Fonseca, that was not the kid. That was not the guy. Right. And it happens. It happens.
Yes.
Listen, we have plenty of mistakes in Italian football. You think Inter did not regret letting go of Andrea Pirlo, arguably one of the top five midfielders in the history of the sport? Sure, they regretted it. Everybody makes regrets, you know? So it happens. But it's always in football, you never get the finished product right away. It's all a matter of development, evolution, and circumstances, and stars aligning in your favor. That's what happened to Calafiori. I hope that in the Euros, we will get to have these, you know, these moments where we see finally players emerge. I want someone like Zeki Salik to finally be able to put himself on display. Not because Roma need to sell him or, you know, but just because sometimes you see these players emerge in a context where they feel more at greater liberty, you know, without that kind of responsibility that a club like Roma carries. Because at Roma, if you make a mistake, you finish outside of top four, you lose Champions League football, you fail to progress at Europa League. If you're at Bologna, you start off by not, I mean, Bologna with Thiago Motta, they were just trying not to be relegated. That's all.
Right.
The fact that they were able to then do what they did was because they worked. Thiago Motta had the right ideas. He changed things up. He saw potential in Calafiori in a different position. He had Calafiori become more physical. I mean, look at how Calafiori looks like now in terms of physique. Compare him to the little stick that we had on the flank.
Yeah, it's not comparison.
Different player. And that's how it emerged. So same thing for Zaleski. I really hope for his sake, because that's a player who needs to find himself a club that knows how to utilize him and that knows how to make him shine. He deserves to shine. At Roma, it's not going to happen.
Couldn't agree more. We will leave it there. Back again a few days, a week, something like that. But until then, ciao.